Very good. So it's good to be here again for another Friday night talk. I've just come back from teaching in Melbourne for the WASAC celebration. And again, always surprised to see just how many people rock up for my talks. First talk in Melbourne University in a lecture theatre, I think one of the biggest ones they had there. And it was all filled up a long time before I arrived. And people sitting on the floor around the podium and in the aisles. And even the professor, he arrived late. He had to stand outside. So I sometimes wonder why it is that, you know, people actually come and listen. And somebody asked me today at lunchtime, just how can we actually, why is it that sometimes you can have trust or faith in a teacher and sometimes not? And how can you actually trust that? How can you actually know? And one of the things is, and it's one of the parts of Buddhism which I, again, always really enjoyed and appreciated, was if it is a real teacher, if it is a real teaching, it's never ever teaching you or telling you what to do or making the decisions for you, but it's actually teaching you how to make those decisions for yourself, illuminating, clarifying your mind so you can actually understand just how one can find the way through this thing we call our life. So whenever I see someone telling me what to do, I think there's something very wrong there. But when it's somebody showing me how to do it for myself, then I think that's a wonderful thing to do. And so part of our training, a part of actually what Buddhism is to try and find, to look at the right places so you can find out the answers to the things which really bother you. I don't know how many times people ask me these questions, should I do this, should I do that, should I actually get this new job, or should I wait for another job, or should I just relax and change my whole career, should I choose this partner, or should I leave them, should I have this operation, or should I not have an operation, should I, what should I do? And sometimes, you know, I think, it's not me who's doing this, make up your own mind, stop bothering me. But, you can't really say that, but instead of actually telling people what their answers are, you always ask them actually to find and feel your heart, but to actually to feel your heart, feel your intuition, that's not such an easy thing to do. To have faith in that intuition, to trust in that, takes a bit of training, first of all. Because most of us in our life, we're always taught to trust either experts, first of all. And I've trusted so many experts in my life and found out most of them are frauds. You know, because maybe they think that's right for them. Maybe it works for them. Maybe you have, you know, this particular diet today and then you find out next week that it's bad. And it just... They're like salt. You know, I always was told salt was bad for you. But then suddenly I read that no, it's actually good for you. And especially good for monks. You know why it's good for monks, salt? It is because salt hardens the arteries and it's also the muscles around the you know, the heart. And monks are far too soft hearted. So we have to harden up a bit to deal with life. So it really depends on who you are, just, you know, with some of these things. And sometimes if you believe what other people say, I always remember that story as a young man. I read this really interesting case of a young boy. And once he was born, once he could crawl, you know, he would always crawl and go for the salt containers. And his mother would always say, that's bad for you, so we'd try and... You know, take the salt containers away. Once he could walk and climb, he would actually climb on the table to take salt and just eat it straight from the container. And so she had to hide the salt or put it in such inaccessible places because her son was just always consuming incredible amounts of salt. And she managed eventually to hide every bit of salt in the kitchen, and then her son got very sick and died. And of course, under the autopsy, they found I had a very, very rare condition where it needed salt. And, you know, so the kid couldn't talk, and just couldn't express, you know, what its emotions and feelings were, but that's actually what it needed. And sometimes it's, I remember even just when I went on pilgrimage to India, a 20-year-old, finding my way in those days, hitchhiking all our way through Europe and Central America, Middle East. That was actually going sort of on buses through the Middle East. And eventually getting to Pakistan, just overland from UK, and just falling really, really, really sick. The first curry I had in Pakistan almost killed me. But anyway, as a vegetarian then. But when, as soon as I got over into India, I just holed up in a hotel for a few days. I never really knew much about medicine, but I had this huge craving for salt. So I just actually went out and bought a bag of salt and started crunching it and eating it. It was just because, you know, I never knew when you had diarrhea, you know, that you actually lose a lot of your salts as well. This was not such a long time ago. We actually can feel that. And so experiences like that have got me to really trust, you know, my sort of feelings, my emotions, and my just inner experience, rather than everything which I have been taught. And it's from experiences like that why I often say you should never allow never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. Because I was taught that salt was bad for you, but in those extreme cases it was actually really useful for me. And so there's many other things like that. Everything you've been taught, the books. Unfortunately, when doctors, they examine patients with sicknesses, sometimes that, you know, you're taught what to do, and the book says this. But many of the best doctors in the world are the ones who actually put the books aside. They can feel this is not right. They know that this is not the right course of treatment, and they're strong enough, and they're also courageous enough to actually do something which is a bit weird, because they realize and they know that, and it changes a person's life. It actually heals them. Never allow sort of your knowledge to stand in the way of truth. And I certainly know that in my life, that so often when you're teaching people, you're counseling people, sometimes there's all this stuff which you're supposed to do, which, being a bit of a rebel, you say, no, I'm not going to do that. You feel what is the right course of action. Now, rather than believing what you're taught or believing what's in the books. And this is what I want to convey, so you can also trust in a very, very accurate source of knowledge and wisdom inside of you, when all the thoughts stop, when you put aside all of your training, and actually you feel the answer. And one of those cases for me which comes to mind, again, I never planned these talks, I never thought of bringing this story up again, but it was a time in Kuala Lumpur when I was teaching, giving some talks, I think a bit of a meditation retreat in there. I do travel around a lot. And the organizers said, would you mind giving like half an hour to counsel this woman, because she's in a very difficult situation and no one else, you know, in the area, all the best counselors can't do anything for her. And that was actually, that's quite a shocking story, but please bear with me. So I didn't know what the problem was, but I knew, because they said that all the other counselors and psychologists, psychiatrists were not able to help her, I knew that I had to put aside all of my ideas and all of my learning and everything I ever knew about Buddhism, wisdom, everything. Because other people had tried that and it hadn't worked. So I just listened to her, you know, with a totally empty mind. What I call like total listening. And that's a very hard thing to do, but like if you're a meditator, you should be able to learn how to totally listen, which means you really open up your ears and your heart, your mind, and just absorb without commenting, either sort of, you know, with your mouth or even with your brain, just to absorb and let all the information come in without rejecting it, adding something from your ideas, just to be almost like totally empty, no thoughts, no ideas, no preconceptions, no religion, no philosophy, no learning, just totally empty, and allow the person to express what their story to you. And You know, many times I've done this, but this was an extreme case simply because my response was totally unexpected, especially to me. It's wonderful when you let go of all control and just see what comes up. And it surprises myself more than anybody else. Sometimes when I give talks, I say, where did that come from when I say something? And it's not coming from me. It's not coming from planning or from thoughts. It's coming from seeing. Anyway, in this particular case, this poor woman in Malaysia, she had been a victim of a rape, a very violent one, which she described to me. It's gross. Really, really sort of, wow, what I heard there was really even hard for me to hear, and she had to endure that. But anyway, I just listened. No judging, no thinking, just absorbing, silent listening. So I wasn't actually commenting, even in my brain. And then after she'd finished, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, just these words, they just came out by themselves, not premeditated at all. And as soon as I said them, you know, I felt a bit shocked at myself. And I looked at her, and the words which came out, I always remember this, the words which came out of my mouth after she described such an awful experience was, "You are so lucky to have been raped like that." And that shocked me. Now, this was not premeditated. This was not thought out. It just came out by itself. "You're so lucky to have been raped like that." And I was surprised. If I'd have heard someone else say something like that, I'd have scolded them or hit them on the head or something. You can't say things like that, but I'd said it. Because it came out of this beautiful intuition. Unexpected, not something you're supposed to do. But then as soon as I said it, I could look into my heart and find out why I said it. And I think I explained to her, I said, "The reason why I said this is because in that silence, listening to you for the last 20 minutes or so, that subconsciously, if you like, certainly subverbally, I've seen that your path, that you are very strong spiritually, even though you've been wounded terribly, you will be able to find a way out of this. And the first part of finding the way out of this is giving it a purpose. And your purpose will be, once you're out of this, to do something which I, as a man who's never been raped, as a monk, will never be able to do. No matter how wise I might be, I can never do what you're going to be able to do. You're going to be able to hold the hand of another woman who's been through what you've been through, rape. And you're going to tell her, 'I know how you feel.' And you will be accurate, you'll be honest, you'll be true. I can't say that. But more than that, more than just empathy, empathy is wonderful, but it's not enough. You'll also be able to take the woman's hand and say, 'Come with me. I know the way out.' Because you've been there and you've taken that way out. You've walked that journey. You have this wonderful gift, something which I will never be able to do. That's why I said that." And that had this wonderful effect, that sometimes when you have been treated so badly, and when it's just so much pain and suffering, and your heart has been ripped out, and you think, sometimes people say, "Why? Why do these things happen?" To give something a purpose is to give you something to work on, something to do, a path. And one of the worst aspects, emotional pain of some of the terrible things which happen, the tragedies, the traumas, the emotional pain gets so bad when there's nothing you can do about it. There's no path, there's no way. You're trapped, you're in a box of pain, you're a dark room and there's no door. If someone can show you a door, that gives you some hope, a path, a way. And I said, "That's your path. Walk it." And apparently that was many years ago, now she's doing that, counselling people. Amazing person. It worked. Because sometimes there's no way that I could ever say or do that if I was a trained counsellor. Felt it in your heart and you just did it and it works. Well, other people could not do that. So what I'm saying, the insight which you get, the wisdom which is not born of learning, it's not born of thinking, but it's born of knowing. And I've trusted that for such a long time, to make those decisions in life and to get other people to make those decisions. Because a lot of times when you have a difficult decision or a problem you want to find a way out of, I always tell them to don't just ignore all the knowledge and thinking, just get as much information as you can. Program it all in. Load yourself up with all the information as much as you can. But when you got to the limit, you know, you've been in the books, you've got all the information, you've got as much evidence or whatever it is, as much learning as you possibly can. Don't be stupid. Just then leave it alone and wait. And then trust in the silence to tell you what to do. And even when that silence, it gives you a really stupid solution, follow it. It may not be intuitive, it's usually counterintuitive, but take that, and it will probably work. Surprise, surprise. Because what you're doing, you're going into a form of wisdom, you know, deep intuition if you like, not just ordinary, oh, I feel like this is the right thing to do. It's something much more powerful than that. You're going into this incredible silence. And why it works, my theory is, okay, only theory, you may trust this, is, you know, because Buddhists, we believe in rebirth, reincarnation, you've been here and done that, you've been around a long time, much longer than you expect, or anticipate, or know. You've had so much experience, which is closed to your thinking mind. But if you can go into that silent mind, still mind, still you possibly can, then you have not just the experience, the knowledge of, you know, what you've done in this life, your learning, you can actually get back into a subconscious experience of previous lives. I'm not saying it's a previous life or not experience it, but all that information, all that knowledge, all that those amazing avenues of escape, if you like, solutions, they're all there for you to tap into, but only when you're silent. You can feel what is right because you do have that knowledge blocked by your learning. So I often like to actually to feel and go as to much stillness as possible to access that. And that's not just accessing how you're going to respond, you know, to the great traumas, but even ordinary things of life. You know, sometimes when people ask me questions or ask Buddhist questions, ethical questions, whether it's gay marriage, euthanasia, abortions, you know, politics, or climate change, animal freedoms, all of these questions which are ethical, I call them dilemmas because people argue over them. And how can you find your way through that ethical forest, which is so tangled? And whenever I do have an ethical decision to make, that's actually how you do it. You feel it. And so before even you actually judge and going into what did the Buddha say about euthanasia, what does a doctor say about it, or even what does science say about it, no, just put that all aside. How do you feel deep inside? I always say, please, always follow your gut feelings, except if you've got irritable bowel syndrome. That's the only exception. But follow them, feel it, and then you know so much, you don't get deceived. And you don't get deceived and lost like this story I heard. I was telling this in Melbourne in the talks there. That this story I heard is this Australian woman was visiting UK. And like anyone who goes touring England, one of the places they always like to go to is the castles. You know, because you don't have many castles in Australia. Not the old ancient ones made out of stone and really huge and dark and spooky. And so she was walking through on a tour through one of these castles, and this man was guiding her, telling her, you know, everything about the castle. And it was really creepy. You know, there are some places you go to and it's really, really scary and creepy. And anyway, when she was going through this castle, she felt very scared many, many times. And at the end of the tour, she had to ask the guide the question, "In this castle, have you ever seen a ghost?" And the guide said, "In all the time I've lived in this castle, I've never seen a ghost." And she said, "Well, how long have you lived in this castle?" And he said, 300 years. That's today's joke, folks. It was a ghost. But if you could feel it, you know, sometimes you can actually feel ghosts. When I was going through the hospital, one of the hospitals over in Melbourne, you know, just, you know, I'd go to so many hospitals, somebody dying, you know, just wanted to see me before they died. And actually, I want to see them after they die. Much more interesting. Have you ever, you know, you see many people when they're dying, but seeing someone after they die, that's really cool. I'm looking for the ghosts. And one of the reasons, one of the ways you can see a ghost, you know, it's supposed to be the case, is actually because they're a ghost, they don't even need to tread on the floor. They can just be a little bit above the floor. So you look at their feet, look at their slippers, and see if there's a little gap under there for slippers. Are they floating or are they really walking? See if that's... And that's sometimes you can see their eye. You can actually feel them sometimes. So unfortunately, there was maybe the wrong time of the day, didn't see any ghosts there. So anyway, it's wonderful if you can do that. I love ghosts. Ghosts are really, really funny. And there was one ghost here, I'm totally off subject. One person told me the story many, many years ago, one of the regulars who came here, that they, in their house in Perth, I said, two ghost stories here. They just moved into a house, and they had one of these old doorbells. You know, you press the button and go ding, 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 ding. And somebody kept on ringing their doorbell. They thought it was the local kids just having fun. So a lot of the time, you know, I used to do that, as a, you know, knock on people's door and run and hide. It's a really crazy thing to do, but, you know, it's just peer pressure. But anyhow, there you go. And so that, you know, a lot of the time they weren't close to the door. So, you know, by the time they got there, you know, the kid would have run off, so they thought. But once they were right next to the door, when the doorbell rang and they opened it straight away, there was no one was there. And no kid could run that fast to hide. It was just a second when they opened the door and they couldn't find anybody there. And that's when they started to wonder whether it was kids playing games or whether it was something else. And it happened so often they decided actually it was a ghost. And they did check. And sure enough, they got it from the real estate agent, never told them at the time, that the previous owner, when they were moving out, they were carrying something heavy, and on the, just when they got through the front door, just in the, you know, just in the, basically on the welcome mat, that's where they had the heart attack. You know, just carrying too much heavy weight. And they died right in front of their house. And of course, real estate agent never told them that. And that was where the ghost was. And so there was a ghost there. And always ringing the bell, trying to get in. So you know what they did? Simple solution, they disconnected the bell. It had a little battery. They took the battery out. That never stopped the ghost. That ghost could ring that bell without a battery. Ghosts carry their own electricity supply. I don't know how they did it, but they said, and these are people I've known for a long, long time, you know, the strong supporters of the monasteries in this place. An amazing story, just a ghost who can ring a bell without any battery in. And the other one, which I was going to say, was the other one where this family, old days, you know, they had one of these, well, not that long ago, had a TV, you know, with a remote control. and watching the TV, their favorite program, and the TV would, without any warning, flip channel. And now they thought it was some electrical fault in the TV or something, so they get the remote control and they switch it back again to their channel, and it would flip back again. Always to the same channel, flip back to the same channel. And it happened so often that after a while they realized that, you know, there was another ghost in the house. And this ghost wanted to watch its program. Doesn't matter what you wanted to watch, the ghost, you know, without a remote control could flip the channel, whatever it wanted to. And they were just getting so frustrated for many, many weeks until they got the obvious solution. This is actually when you feel it rather than think about it. The obvious solution was obvious. They bought another TV. One for the ghost and one for them. So the ghost, honestly, this is not a joke. This actually happened here in Perth. So the ghost had their TV and they could turn it on and walk or whatever they wanted. And so the ghost and the other family, they could watch their own TV. So it's an obvious, and it's a nice compromise solution. Absolutely true story. You won't believe it, but it actually happened. So many ghosts. I mean, what do you think a ghost can do all day? Just gets bored, haunting people, or ringing doorbells. You shouldn't get tired of that. You know, the ghost wants to see, the news, or wants to see the football, or see a movie. Maybe, the ghost was really into Star Wars, wanted to see the latest Star Wars movie episode. Because it missed it, it died before it came out. So of course the ghost wants to see the TV. So that's what this ghost was up to. Anyway, so sometimes all of my learning said that was impossible. And my whole life has probably been seeing the impossible actually happening. You ever done that? It's incredible, this world. So never allow all that you've learned to stand in the way of truth. Especially going back to actually making decisions in life. So I put all the information in, and I wait for the answer. And sometimes the answers are just totally weird. They don't make any sense. But I've lived long enough now to trust those weird ideas and follow them through, and it usually works, and it's very, very successful. You feel the answer. You get into this intuition business. And also just, with health problems, okay. Many, many people get too sick, and the health system in the West is really creaking under the strain of too many sick people. Fortunately, I'm not one of those. It's been such a long time since I've had any sickness at all. And my mum's always getting sick. I come back and there's another person sick, or I have to go to the hospital, I have to go and see the doctor, and cost, all this money with petrol. It's really bad for climate change having to go to see the doctor, especially if you live a long way from the doctor like we do in Serpentine. So I decided to help, do my bit with climate change by not getting sick. That'd be really, really healthy. And one thing which I do, which I encourage other people to, I want to teach you how to do these things rather than tell you what to do. That you get so aware of your body, like I keep teaching you in this meditation, really aware of it. And I don't know exactly what's wrong. I don't know all the terms and what flu it is, or what fever it is, or what disease it is, or what syndrome it is. But sometimes you can feel that something is not balanced in your body. Feel there's a tightness there, or there's a lack of energy, or there's something wrong there. It's so hard to give it a name, so I forget about names, but I can feel something. If I can't fix it by just relaxing it, like I taught you here, then sometimes I just say, okay, I'm going to take an hour off. I'm just going to go lay down, go to bed. And the weirdest of times, okay, I don't know if I've got to go to an appointment, I've got to do something, sorry, it's cancelled. I know that sometimes it's like that. You've had a really good sleep, and no reason why you should go to sleep again. But you say, no, you feel it. And just take a quarter of an hour, half an hour, you lay down, you have this really beautiful deep sleep, and you wake up $1 million. What it really is you're listening to your body. And I trust, my body's teaching. If it says, have three glasses of water, I take that, just because I learned that. Eat some salt. Like I learned when I was in Pakistan, or just in India, sorry. just over the border. And I ate that salt. And I only found out afterwards how important it was for me, having had diarrhea and being dehydrated. I thought just water was all you needed. You need the salts as well as that. I never knew that at the time, but I felt it. So often in life, it's like that. You feel that this is what you need. You listen to your body. It doesn't make any sense to you, but you follow it, and you're incredibly, incredibly healthy. So being aware of your body, oh, you can do so much for your health, you know, with that. I don't know why it works, how it works. It's just the body is more. Me, I've been all this learning. What's good to eat, what medication I should have, and this is how to do the exercise and do this and do that. But I actually feel it, if it's the right thing to do. I don't follow other people's ideas. I don't even follow my ideas. I follow my body's ideas. I listen to it. And that ability to totally listen to something like your body, totally listen to life, because life is one of the greatest teachers, always letting you know what's going on. It is much wiser than any monk or any guru, the Dalai Lama, much wiser than the Pope, much wiser than Deepak Chopra, much wiser than those other people. Life should be your teacher. But to be able to hear the teachings of life, say, it's something else which is happening. In what they called, and it's an old, so in the relationship you have with, you know, your friend, that is where you see the truth. In the relationship you have with the stars at night when you lay on your back and it's a nice clear night. In the relationship you have just walking on the beach and getting your feet all sandy. It's the relationship you have with between you, your experience between us. Because for me, that all life is a relationship. I don't exist between other times. It's a totally different Ajahn Brahm. We have a relationship every Friday evening when we give a talk. You have a relationship even with yourself when you're by alone. That's why I always say when people complain about loneliness, there's no such thing as loneliness if you're a good friend to yourself. Because I've spent such a long time in solitude. That one time, 6 months, I did a retreat by myself. Never saw a human being for 6 months. Never talked to anyone for 6 months. And I never felt lonely, not one moment. When people ask, how can you survive 6 months in total solitude? I think even if you do solitary confinement that long, it's probably against the health requirements. It's called torture. You're going to drive you mad. I don't think even in Guantanamo Bay they'll put you in solitary for that, voluntarily. Because I never felt alone, not once, because the way I looked at it, I was always with me. And it reminds me of a nice little story, which is a great one to tell your kids, or even maybe, you know, applies to you. It was in many ancient days, same in India, same in actually in ancient. When the kids would go and learn something from a teacher, one teacher would teach them everything, you know, from language and writing to arithmetic to astronomy. And so someone would stuff, you know, not just one subject. And this particular teacher in India, he had a large number of disciples, maybe 16 or 17 disciples. But his wife had died, but he had one daughter. Okay, this is a bit sexist. This was a long time ago, okay, but she was really beautiful. And in those days, there had to be arranged marriages. There's no way that in that culture, hundreds of years ago, she could choose her own husband. But that's incidental to the story. But anyway, that one day the teacher got all his students together and said, my beautiful daughter is now of the age to get married, and according to my culture, I'm supposed to organize and arrange the marriage. I know she's very beautiful, a beautiful girl, very charming, and make a great wife for anybody. But I have two problems, said the teacher. I do not know you know, which of my students should marry her, and it should be one of my students according to custom. I don't know which one to choose. And number two, I'm so poor that I will not be able to afford the marriage ceremonies and giving the two of you a start in life by getting you a little hut somewhere, a house somewhere. So those are my two problems. I don't know who to choose, and I'm too poor. But I have a solution to my problem, said the teacher. So I'm going to give you a contest. And whoever wins the contest can marry my daughter, and also the whole type of contest will also solve my second problem, to get you started in life. Because what the contest is I want each one of you to creep into the villages at night time, to see if you can sneak into people's houses and steal. But you must be very careful. When if you steal, don't let anybody see you. And bring everything back, and whoever steals the most will win my daughter, and all the loot, the proceeds of your stealing, will all go to the happy couple. And at that, the students were shocked. Their teacher, was usually a very ethical man, was asking them to steal. But in those days, they had this idea of obedience. And it was such an old tradition. It's a sort of tradition which has totally disappeared from our schools these days. I mean, kids being obedient. You know, actually, that every now and again that we go and visit the Benedictine monks at New Norcia, you know, they're really good friends. And they tell me that when the monks meet each other, we do that every year, and we've been doing that for years. So we're really good friends. You know, we talk about monk business, not monkey business, monk business. And it's the only abbot I know of there, Abbot John now. He's the one I can actually, you know, get some, actually I give him advice these days, because he's a much younger abbot than I have. You know, abbots, it's amazing just how we have the same problem, who, unfortunately, you know, sometimes go to Greylands. And, you know, they sort of go over to New Norcia Monastery, and they're looked after. But, you know, some of them are very, very hard to deal with. And so that they tell me about those people, because after New Norcia, they usually come to Bodhinyana. So, you know, we've got our blacklist, and they tell me, and we tell them, so that we can actually look after one another. Because the same people come to the same place. So anyway, so there's a lot of benefit we can have by sort of, you know, combining our experiences in New Norcia and Bodhinyana. And also Dhammasara later on. So anyway, but one of the things they have there, they have this wonderful idea of obedience to the abbot. And when they told me about that, and when they were saying what a wonderful thing it is, I went back to the monks in Bodhinyana and said, how about we have this, obedience to me? I don't know why, but they couldn't see the benefits at all. And it was posted down. It was worth a try, though. But anyway, in those days, told them to steal. They, you know, they had to follow the orders. They, you know, wanted to get married anyway to this beautiful girl. So they all went in the village. They waited till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning till everyone was asleep. They snuck in the darkness, make sure that no one could see them. Stole this, stole that, and stole something else. And after 7 days, the teacher said, enough. We've got enough now, so you can stop. And he brought, you've done so well, you've been so obedient, you've stolen so much, enough that any couple will be happy for a long time, except for one of you. There's always one. And this poor little boy, sort of, you know, really embarrassed, singled out, and the teacher said, come out here. Why were you so disobedient and never stole anything? And the student said, but sir, I was obedient. I followed your orders. Well, why didn't you steal anything? I followed your orders because you told me to steal, but don't take anything if somebody's watching. Well, didn't you go into empty houses or when they were fast asleep, when they had their eyes closed because they were fast asleep? He said, oh yeah, there's always somebody watching. He said, I was watching me steal. That's why I could never take anything, Because you told me, don't take something if someone's watching. I was watching. And that's a beautiful story. And then, of course, in the end, you know, the sort of ending in those type of stories. The teacher said, oh, thank goodness I've got one. The villagers, that's why I can get in there. You know, I know exactly who what belongs to them. Take them, but they won't scold you. They won't call the police. Just take it all back. I'm rich enough, said the teacher. I just wanted to find out which one of you was wise. Because I'm going to choose somebody for my husband, for my wife, for my daughter, sorry. I want someone who's wise and kind, who actually is aware. Because whatever you do, there's always somebody watching. You are. You're never alone, because there's always somebody with you. You are with you. And that's always why I say, if you're your best friend, if you have some kindness, if you have some love and appreciation for yourself, tolerance for yourself, wisdom to see that you're a great person, then you're always at peace with yourself. So for 6 months, I could spend all the time by myself. I made people laugh in Melbourne when I said, I'm an introvert. And they said, they were laughing because I was talking in front of about 1,500 people. I'm an introvert because I like looking inside. That's what an introvert is. And other times I'm an extrovert. I look outside. You can share. So you find in life, if you're a friend to yourself, you really have a great appreciation for yourself. You understand yourself. You know yourself. You're not that bad. There's beautiful parts of yourself. And those which aren't beautiful parts of yourself, you know, telling bad jokes, you know, that's what makes you unique. Each one of you got your unique, stupid characteristics, and that's what makes you absolutely lovable. So, you know the old story of the bent trees in the forest, if they weren't bent and crooked, they wouldn't be beautiful. So all the idiosyncrasies is that's why you love yourself. That's why you're at peace with yourself. That's why you're friends with yourself. And once you train on yourself, this great, you know, silent knowing, you understand who you are. You feel who you are, and you appreciate who you are. Not through all your learning. Because everything you've ever learned in this culture is you're not good enough. Are you? That's what your parents said. That's what your teachers say. That's what your boyfriend says. That's what your partner says. You're not good enough. And that's a lot of... Actually, the word, you know, the Gomayang, that word, it means bullshit, but I can't say that word, so I say it in the Pali. Gomayang. Well, I did say it, didn't I? Yeah, I know I did. It's on purpose. But, you know, some things I say, oh, that's totally crazy. You know, all that you've been told, put that aside. And feel instead. Go to your total listening. And you feel there's nothing wrong with you. You belong. You're a tree in the forest. No tree is dead straight. You belong. You're here. So that means that you're at peace with yourself. When you're by yourself, you're having a great time. It doesn't matter who you are, if you're disabled, if you're bent, if you're crooked, if you're stupid, if you're old, if you're young, I don't care. You all belong. Once you understand that, you belong. That answers many of the questions of your life. So be at peace with yourself and realizing one of the greatest insights you will ever have, you don't need to improve. How many people just keep trying to do better, trying to improve themselves? And people say, but Ajahn Brahm, if I don't improve myself, how will I get on in life? Exactly, don't get on in life, be in life. Stop going places, be here. You're here. People like to strive so they can like arrive. What are you trying to arrive to? In fact, you've already arrived. As I like saying, what the people say to these great film stars when they got their Oscar, or when they got their Logie in the TV, you've arrived, baby, you've arrived. And I say that to every one of you. You've arrived, baby. You've arrived. In other words, you've made it. You've made it to here, where he happens to be. You're good enough. So that beautiful acceptance of yourself, being at peace with yourself, Now you can transfer that to other people and say to your partner, you've arrived, partner, you've arrived. You don't have to improve yourself. You're at peace. You know that many people, they have this weird idea. If you just arrive at peace with yourself, if you love yourself, then the world stagnates. There's never any advancement, any growth. But actually the opposite happens. If you're at peace with yourself, if you love yourself, then you can learn how to love and be at peace with others, to accept other people. All your problems get solved. You get to be at peace with life. Which means we don't cause so many problems in this life. We tread very, very, very lightly. And we experience that, we feel that, we know that. Not something we've been told, but something we experience and feel. Which is why, that's why I teach like this. Because I want you to feel this and to know it for yourselves. It's not a theory. It's not a dogma. It's not something which you have to take on faith. It's actually something which actually works. That's why many of you people come here. Not because it makes sense in the sense that you believe. I believe in Ajahn. You don't believe. You feel. Now, what's between me and myself? What's between me and the partner? What's between me and life? I've got this beautiful sense of kindness, warmth, acceptance. And from there you get all the growth you ever want in life. That's where the world develops from. A tree grows by itself, you just need to care for it. You don't need to grow it. The tree does it. So if you don't do anything, just leave the tree there, protect it, care for it. It grows by itself, and after a few years you've got this huge, beautiful tree. Your relationship, care for it, nurture it, look after it, it grows by itself. The world solving problems, it grows by itself if we know how to care and nurture it. So all this stuff, this teaching, essence of Buddhism, essence of Dhamma, a truth which you know, you feel, makes sense. A lot of times I've often said I feel like a fraud teaching, sitting up here, because I'm only teaching what you already know. You know all of this, but it needs to be reinforced. It needs for you to get that strength and that reinforcement so that you can know rather than just believe. So that is how we find out the truth. Thank you for listening to another talk, and sorry about the joke. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, oh, we've got some questions today. The first is from the USA, from the UK, and also from the ghost world. Wouldn't it be wonderful, actually, that I did... one of my disciples did once get an email from the ghost world. Honest, real story, that there was a Sri Lankan lady dying, and she went to Singapore for treatment, and it wasn't working. She was paralyzed from the neck down with her cancer for days. And at the very end, I think her sister begged me, can you please just talk to my dying sister, just the last day of her life, or a few days. It lasted about 3 days. So, in Bodhinyana Monastery in the evening, this woman called me, and she could hardly speak, and it's just so weak. So I just talked to her, mostly, for about 10 minutes, 3 nights in a row. The fourth night, they never called, so I knew what was happening. They died. The next night, though, her sister called from Singapore. Said, Ajahn Brahm, now my sister died last night. Thank you, thank you, thank you for talking to her in the last days of her life. But she said a weird thing happened. He said about 6 or 8 hours after she passed away, she received an email from her dead sister just saying thank you and thank you to Ajahn Brahm. She was dead at the time. They got the email. And she'd been... paralyzed from the neck down, for days beforehand. An email from a ghost. Honestly, this happened. And I often say that from that moment on, I knew what Gmail meant. ghost mail. It's not Google Man, it's ghost mail. But anyway, that's the story. But that's, again, another true story. And for USA, how do you know when it's okay to make yourself happy if it may hurt others? Exactly. You never make yourself happy. You never make other people happy. You make us happy. Different. So look at the space between you and others. It's always about making us happy. You don't exist apart from others. So see if you can actually look how we can make me happy. So it's not about me, it's not about you, your partner, it's always about us. So ask that question, not how you can make you happy, not how you may not hurt others, but how you can help us. Ask that question, put your focus there, and amazing solutions come. From the UK, I'm an alcoholic and sometimes I find it hard to trust what's my intuition, what's my desires. How can I trust my intuition when I have addictive tendencies? Michael from UK. I'd actually probably say because you don't trust your intuition, that is why you're addictive. Trust that intuition. And a lot of time I would think that that may be the path out. And because of many of your addictions, we always say it's like self-destructive mostly. People who have had addictions always tell me that they have very, very, very low self-esteem, which means that they don't feel they're worth saving or redeeming, which is why they just go for those addictions. So your intuition and trust, hopefully that intuition and trust will see far deeper than what you've been told, far deeper than what you've assumed, far deeper than what you've learned to what's really true. And how I know that truth is that human beings are actually beautiful people. Inside themselves is a lot of glorious parts of you. Now inside, yeah, that's the old simile I used to give of the lotus. You look at a lotus flower which is closed up and it's all dirty and serrated on the outside. It's got a hard outermost petal. It's a lotus. Look at one in any lake in the night time when it's all closed up. Smell that closed lotus. You'll never ever believe, if you didn't know, that inside that hard, serrated, dirty, thick outermost petal are the most gorgeous and fragrant inner petals. And they're just so colourful, the whites and the yellows, the blue lotuses, and they're just so fragrant inside. But when they're all closed up, you can't see it, you don't know it, you can't smell it. I always say that's the human being. On the outside, it can be so rough and coarse. But you open them out, or let them open themselves out and look inside. Incredible beauty. And that's actually what my job is. That's what your job is, to actually to look at that. Not telling you what to believe, to find that out. Listen, stop all this thought and all these ideas, everything you've been told about yourself and you're good enough, you're not good enough. Look inside of that. And the deeper you go in your lotus, which is you, the more beauty you see. When you see so much beauty, you don't need addictions anymore. And lastly, does the universe exist outside my brain, or is it unknowable? Yes, from Victoria, I exist in your brain, the whole world exists in your brain. This talk is, no, it doesn't, that's a lot of go my young again. The universe exists between our brains. Not in your brain, not in my brain. In the space in between. That's where the universe lives. So have a look there. Not in my brain, not in your own brain. In what is between us. That is a great place to see. Okay, so there we go. I hope I answered those questions okay. Any questions from the audience here, the floor? Yes, we have one over there. We got any? Here we go. Yeah.
Yes. You talked about love and acceptance in your speech today.
Yeah.
And it really touched me. And I'm just wondering, how would one go about achieving that?
Come to this place, hang around good people, we'll soon brainwash you.
Thank you.
That is true. Because sometimes, as I said, you know that. You know that deep inside of you. You just need to be reminded. So much other stuff just reminds you of other things and just takes you out from that center. Always criticizing yourself. I don't know where you work. Your boss thinks you're never working hard enough, never good enough. If you've got a partner, you're never on time enough, you're never rich enough, you're never sexy enough, you're never... whatever it is. And it's just such a pain. You know, try my best. What do you mean I'm never good enough? And then even when you get very old, you know, and you get sick, you're never dead enough. You're never anything enough. Your whole life is like that. So when you hang around wise people, and actually you get this great sense of feeling at home with you, at home with others. Imagine like a world where people are just accepted and respected. And even when they do stupid things, we all do stupid things. If we didn't do stupid things in this world would be just so utterly boring. There'd be no jokes around if people an old kid's joke. But it just comes up. About the three bank robbers? Three bank robbers, they robbed a bank, and as they ran out of the bank, a police car came around the corner. So they raced, and the only place they could really hide was in a park. It was dark. So they each climbed a tree. And when the police, they knew they'd got into the car park, so they, with their really powerful flashlights, they were looking around, looking up the tree. They saw a dark shape up the tree somewhere. So they shouted out, "What's that?" And then this bank robber, really smart, went meow, meow. And the police, not being the brightest of people in that city, said, "Oh, it's only a cat, it's only a cat." So they went to another tree, they saw another dark shape up there, another bank robber hiding up there. "What's that?" And it went, "Woohoo, woohoo," like an owl. I can't do owls. But anyway, they said, "It's an owl, okay." So they went up to the next tree, that's the third bank robber. You know, he was really a sort of a few cells short of a prison. And he, when they saw his black shape up there, dark shape, they said, "Who's that?" And they saw how the other two bank robbers got away, one impersonating a cat, the other impersonating an owl. So this bank robber went, "Moo." A stupid joke. But if people actually did do stupid things like that, which they probably would do, then we wouldn't have so much fun in this world. So thank you for all the stupid people. We'd have no laughter and no jokes. Thank you. Okay, you got one more question here. Go on. Yeah. She's been following me, because she was in Melbourne last week. Stalker. Okay, very good. Very good. Okay. Haven't you had enough of me?
My question is...
Yeah, go on.
When someone says he has insight into delusion, and delusion is more dangerous than death, what do you make up of this?
What do I make up of that? They call the insight into a delusion. They probably is very deluded. Because we do get insight into things. You don't tell people about it. You don't wear it on your shoulder like a badge or a medal from the war. You know, if a person has gone through delusion, past it, we don't tell anybody about it. So the real people are not deluded. You don't know. They may be sitting right behind you. Who knows? Now, this is the thing. The biggest delusion is the delusion of you thinking you are beyond delusion, that you are like this, that you are like that. It's wonderful. You know, sometimes it's nice to be deluded and sometimes not deluded. And wouldn't it be wonderful to be free? To be whatever happens, instead of always having to be wise. Sometimes I'm really stupid. What was one of the stupidest things which I did? I did something really stupid a few days ago. I forget what was it. I think I'm in denial or something, because I can't remember it, but I know it's something really, really stupid. Polen, be stupid. I want stupid people's rights. Every time I'm stupid, people actually criticize me and say, stop being stupid. I have a right to be stupid, and so do you. You want to share what? Stupidity. We're very good at share the practice. The only way of sharing the practice is, again, actually, by not talking too much. Be silent and let that sort of the wisdom of silence. In other words, just total listening to this world. Which means sometimes we speak back to the world far too much. You've ever been with someone who always talks back at you? Always talking, talking, so you can never say anything. Sometimes that's like a human being in the world. Human beings always talking back to life, never listening to life. So I like the idea of just listening to life rather than talking back at her. That's winning wise. So, okay, thank you for that gift, and it's nice to see you again. Haven't seen you for a long time, it was 2 days ago in Melbourne. Okay, so let's pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, and then we can actually go and do what we need to do.